Welcome, everybody. We're going to have a talk by three people here. It's an open source investigation by Paul Wagner, Matthias Monroy, and Felix Weiss. And it's regarding a Libyan militia and their ties with the EU. They did their investigations by a very low budget open source intelligence and unveiled how this TBZ, so the Tarek Ben Zayat organization, actually operates, and with which European actors actually that they communicate and operate. That's, I think, the introduction to our lecture. Please take the stage, gentlemen, and have fun here.
Thank you. So I have to say I was not part of the investigation, but I'm very glad that I can make a kind of introduction here before Felix and Paul will present their findings or the way they did the research. I just want to explain a little bit the system that the EU had been installing since what they call the migration crisis, or what we would call the summer of resistance. So when many people were fleeing into the EU 2014-15. There had been harsh reactions by the European Union to, in future, prevent that. And Frontex played a role in that, and I will try to very briefly explain this system. So there are many conventions in place that are prohibiting to bring refugees back to places where they are in whatever kind of, whatever form, endangered. I just mentioned two important ones, like the Geneva Refugee Convention and the Convention Against Torture. You can see a quote here. So the important wording is like, you are not allowed to bring refugees to a place where they are suffering like inhuman treatment or serious human rights violations. This was, I will not go into details, was just to mention them. And this also applies for maritime affairs and for search and rescue, SAR. And I mentioned some other conventions here that are all saying refugees, or let's say people in distress that you get on board after a search and rescue case, had to be brought to a place of safety. So there are several conventions saying that, most of them under the body of the United Nations. An important authority here is the IMO, the International Maritime Organization. And they had also guidelines where they specify, like, disembarkation of people who were taken on board, if they are refugees and asylum seekers, should not take place where they are at risk. So serious harm must be avoided. So this was reaffirmed in the recent years two times. So the law or the international conventions are very clear on that. And it's also very clear that Libya is not such a safe of place, place of safety. And probably some of you remember what cable of the German embassy, a German embassy from North Africa, said in 2017, that the camps in Libya, the migration camps, are like concentration camps. And that was a German diplomat saying that. And since that, as we observe, the conditions even worse. So it's forbidden to bring people back to Libya for captains. And this also applies for merchant vessels. There had been a case in Italy where a captain was sentenced for such a pushback. So this is the wording we use for that. And also the German criminal law is prohibiting this. There is a section in the Strafgesetzbuch, the criminal law, about abandonment. But this is still happening. So this is a German ship that was in 2015 from a Hamburg company, OP Lok, and they brought people on the merchant vessel back to Libya. But search and rescue organizations from the civil fleet don't do this, so they, of course, they obey the international conventions and bring the people to Europe, where they are much safer than they are in North Africa. But this is something that the European Union tried to undermine since 2015. And one of the efforts is to set in place a European contact group on search and rescue, which is consisting of all the member states. And Germany is playing a big role in that. They are sending delegates from the Ministry of Traffic, from the Foreign Ministry, and from the Ministry of Interior. And also Italy is very present there. And what they do is try to change the regulation that I had been mentioned before. And of course, they will not be able to change the Geneva Refugee Convention, but they might change, for example, technical guidelines that the IMO, the International Maritime Organization, is recommending how states should deal with the administration of ships. So, for example, there's the idea to harmonize the technical requirements that ships have to fulfill. And this is a practice that we observe in Italy, that the authorities use lots of kinds of repression to keep the civil fleet in the harbors. So they call it discussions with the IMO on the regulation. We have to see what will come out of that. But one of the recommendations is also that the refugee organization, the civil fleet, the search and rescue organizations will be forced to collaborate more with the police and make interrogations of refugees that they have taken on board and this kind of stuff. But what was very important is that the EU started to build up a so-called Libyan Coast Guard. So you might remember after Gaddafi was also bombed by NATO states, there was a total breakdown of the state, and Libya didn't have a coast guard, not at all. There was no such thing as a Libyan coast guard at that time. And so the idea was, if the EU and the member states are, if it's forbidden for them to push back people to Libya, to then build up a coast guard that pulls the people back to Libya. And this is what they done. They paid like 60 million euro. One important thing is the notifying of the Libyan Tsar zone. This is a search and rescue zone. So these are international waters. And you see on the bottom this Libyan Tsar zone. This also didn't exist before. So all distress cases, maritime distress cases in that area were at that time, so before 2018, it was coordinated by Italy. And of course, if the people were taken on board in the Libyan Tsar zone, they had to be brought to Italy. But what they did, what the EU did, or Italy did with EU money, was like install also what they call a rescue coordination center. This is mandatory. If you have a such a rescue zone notified at the IMO, you need a maritime rescue coordination center. You have to fulfill certain safeguards, stuff like that. So you have to have like a telephone connection, internet. You have to somebody who is receiving calls, who speaks English 24/7. You have to have ambulances ready. So these are the facts that you have to fulfill. And also surveillance equipment was bought to control the area. And we tried to find out a little bit more, like, okay, what happened with the money? This is a question that has been done with Ask the EU. It's one of the platforms like Frag den Staat, where you can do like freedom of information requests. And you see the EU is not very willing to explain where the money went, the 59 million euro. Then we had been asking the EU Commission and the EU Council, so these are two important bodies on the EU legislation or the EU authorities. So we asked the Commission, okay, you paid 2017, you paid like, you started to pay 60 million euro to Italy to install a maritime rescue coordination center, but many sea rescue organizations say this doesn't exist. So if we call them, there is nobody answering the phone or the persons are not speaking English. So what did you done with the money? And the Commission was like, we have no idea if there is an MRCC or where it is. That was in 2021. Then we asked the Council. The Council replied basically the same. So we have no idea. Then in the same year it came out, it didn't work. So they started to install a mobile MRCC. So they did another effort, with technology, communication technology, surveillance technology. Then we asked, okay, and where will this, so it was delivered, where will this be installed and which militias or bodies in Libya will use it? And they were like, we don't know, discussions are still ongoing. So we yet still don't know where this thing is operating. There is another mission operating from the EU in Libya, which is like a civil defense mission, and they produced a handbook how to do search and rescue and how to handle such a maritime rescue coordination center. I applied with Frankenstaat, like, could I see this? And they refused it because it would undermine public security if it would come out what is written down in the handbook. I mean, I don't understand, but this is the politics. So this is a paper that I received with Frankenstaat, and here it shows like the surveillance means that the Italian Coast Guard is using for like intelligence about being informed about boats. The interesting thing is here that they mentioned the alarm phone that in other aspects is very much criminalized. Here you see like area assets in the middle. This is a Frontex plane. And this is also another important step of this backdoor I had been talking about, or I want to talk about. So Libya doesn't have any aerial assets. So they have no air force, they have no helicopters for the Coast Guard. And this is what, since 2016, Frontex had been taking over this task. And they changed the regulation. Frontex was allowed to acquire own planes and drones, and this is what they did. So they spent lots of money of their budget for this aerial surveillance, and they hand over the information to the Libyan Coast Guard to then go out and bring the people back to Libya. I wanted to know more about the technical capacities of the drones and planes. So what is known is that they have certain sensors on board, but it was reported, or there was the suspicion that they also have communication intelligence, so that they are kind of monitoring satellite phones that the people have on board, so to detect where the boats are located. So if you locate a satellite phone, you can also locate the boat. Frontex replied with Frankenstaat, they have not such a technology on board. And then I received a presentation from Airbus, which is operating the drones for Frontex. So it's not Frontex drones, it's Airbus drones. Basically, the drones are from the Israeli military. And they do say they have communication intelligence sensors on board. So this is just to explain it a little bit how difficult it is to get this information. And Frontex says we are really following all the legal framework, so we are not communicating directly with the Libyan Coast Guard, but we do it with the Maritime Coordination Center that we just had been installing, which is the backdoor. But it came out that Frontex has a direct, or Airbus, the people that are operating the drones, have a direct connection with the Libyan Coast Guard via WhatsApp. And so I had been asking Frontex, like, to what extent they use these direct channels, and they say, no, we don't use these direct channels. But then I received WhatsApp messages from Frontex, so in many cases the text is removed, but what you can see here, hi. Hello, how are you? I'm the captain, Libyan Coast Guard. Good morning. Do you have anything about immigrants who need help? And this indicates very clear it's not only in Mayday distress cases when they use this WhatsApp channel, what they said on another occasion. So, but it's really like writing a WhatsApp, hey, we are ready, where should we go, what do you think? And this is what had been happening. So one of the messages here is from 14th of June in 2021, where the this ship, a merchant vessel, was Triton, handed over people that they took on board to the Libyan Coast Guard, and this was coordinated by a Frontex aerial asset. I would end with another aspect. So there had been lots of criticism of the EU Frontex collaborating with the Libyan Coast Guard. And in 2019, the European Commission put in place a monitoring mission on human rights to figure out, do all the financial contributions given to the Libyan Coast Guard, do they meet international standards on human rights? And they said, we have a third-party monitoring, which means it's probably a kind of consulting company doing it. And we were like, okay, who is this? Who is making this this monitoring? And what about the reports? And the reply was, a third-party monitoring system is in place. And we were like, a third time asking, like, but what have these mechanisms found so far? And the reply was, we have a monitoring system in place. So it's really not clear if this monitoring system, I mean, in my opinion, it's bullshit anyway. What are the findings? These are parliamentarian questions, by the way. So even the EU Parliament is not able to get into that. That was just a brief introduction for the open source intelligence investigation of Paul and Felix, who would then continue. Thank you.
So thanks to Matthias, you hopefully kind of get an understanding what kind of domestic and post-apocalyptic tools the European Union has installed in the last couple of years, just to keep people on the move on distance so they cannot reach any European shore anymore. Maybe short introduction from our side, Paul and me, we are coming from Sea-Watch, which is a sea rescue organization which is active in the Central Mediterranean Sea since 2015, and right now in action with two vessels, the Sea-Watch 5 and Aurora, and also two aircraft, Seabird 1 and Seabird 2. So what is Sea-Watch and why do we have planes? I mean, we go straight into the Central Mediterranean Sea, and first of all, the rescue coordination centers or state actors in particularly don't work with us. So this is also the reason why we need to find boats in distress by ourselves, even when, for example, Frontex has found them several hours before. And on the other hand, we are there for the documentation of human rights violations, where we're going to dig deeper into this briefly. So what you can see here is the common migration route, which is the western part of Libya, simply because Lampedusa is the closest European island. So from Tripoli to Lampedusa, it takes 180 nautical miles, which is on a flimsy rubber dinghy up to 2 days. So it makes completely sense for the European Union to partner up with political leaders into the region to stop people on the move, to just reach Lampedusa itself. So because of this impact, we, for example, see pullbacks day by day, and we see also border violence. So now let's have a quick look about the allies that partnered up with the European Union in the past. So what you have seen here is the so-called Libyan Coast Guard inside the Maltese search and rescue zone hunting more or less a wooden boat with 50 people on board. They have shot it several times in the water to scare the people. They tried to crash into the boat so it capsized by itself so they can intercept the people then. They were also throwing sticks, metal ropes, and whatsoever on the people. Luckily, people could escape in this specific case and found their way to Lampedusa, but this was a lucky shot. Most of the times, these violent attacks end up in disasters. And because of that, and especially also the financing from the so-called Libyan Coast Guard, the equipping from the so-called Libyan Coast Guard, the aerial surveillance, from Frontex, which is guiding kind of the so-called Libyan Coast Guard to the distress cases, and especially also the establishment from the Libyan search and rescue zone, we do really see an impact and a change of migration route. So when we tell you about the explanation, or let's say the professionalization of pullbacks, we also mean that they have become quite professional in the past. So all of the burden, I would say, was transferred to Libyan actors who being installed as a gatekeeper can do what the European Union is not allowed to do, which is the pullback itself. So what the European Union is trying to achieve is that less people are reaching the European Union. What the current fascist government in Italy is trying to achieve is that no one is reaching Italy shore anymore. But what they get is that people are being forced to search for even more dangerous routes and for more deadly routes. And this is happening right now in the eastern part of Libya, where Paul will give you like a more detailed version about that.
Hi everyone. So Felix just told you a bit about our work, and Matthias and Felix a bit how fucked up EU-funded so-called Libyan Coast Guard is acting in the western part of the country. But there was, or is, until this year, a vacuum in the eastern part of the country. So I will be telling you a bit more about the situation that led to the rise of Tarek Ben Ziyad Brigade, the topic of today's talk, in the eastern part of Libya as a naval actor. So if you were to flee from eastern Libya, Tobruk or Benghazi, for example, from cities in the east, the route was always kind of a bit different than the western route from Tripoli, because there is the Maltese search and rescue zone, but Malta has since quite a while abandoned on sea rescue. So people would either make it to Italy, very rarely to Malta, or die, but they normally wouldn't be intercepted. So this was all taking place in what we frame as the Tsar Free route, which is the route of eastern Libya. And what we often observe is also the boats were different or are different. So they are very large fishing vessels. From a rescue perspective, they are really a catastrophe, because if they capsize, there's a lot of people that is going to die. And I guess a classic Tsar Free departure that is in everyone's mind is the Pylos shipwreck. So these kinds of boats. But Pylos, as we will see later, was already a case that was a bit different from the cases beforehand, because Tarek Ben Ziyad was already involved in Pylos. And Malta would be normally the responsible authority, but as I said, they mostly ignore distress calls, but also our calls. So when we call them, they just hang up. So they would be normally obliged to rescue, but what they do is really dodgy stuff, which you wouldn't believe the European government's doing. So they send in, they would never like say who they are when they come onto a rescue scene. They come, they hand out life jackets, they go away, or just ask merchant vessels to refuel people in distress in heavily overcrowded boats, hoping that they would make it to Italy and not come to Malta. So this kind of dodgy behavior, and obviously this is a clear violation of the law of the seas and their duty to rescue. So it was always a problem for Malta that there were no interceptions, and also for Italy, because more people arrived. So I want to quickly show you two audio snippets that kind of prove this. The first one is comms between our monitoring airplane, Seabird, and a merchant vessel called FMT Urla. I hope you all got it. I don't have subtitles, sound is very shitty. So FMT Urla just confirmed that yes, RCC Malta said we are going to refuel the distress case. In this case, for example, they got rescued by an Italian ship and went to Italy, so Malta was successful. But nobody died, luckily. And then another call, which is from our air liaison officer, so ground personnel, to to the RCC, and it's rare because they answer the phone. Normally they would just like hear a seabird calling and then they would just hang up. And then you try several times, they would directly hang up. So they answered in this case, but let's see what they said.
Yes, kindly send us an email if you want to give us some information.
Okay. I've already sent you an email, sir.
Okay, we have received it, okay?
Yeah, I would also like to talk to you about what's going on about this case, sir.
I'm very sorry, we don't speak with NGOs.
You don't speak with NGOs, why don't you do that?
Then the call ended, so... Yeah, that's just to show you Malta's behavior. And just to be clear, people die because of this. And so to summarize, what was always bothering the EU, Malta and Italy specifically, there were no interceptions in the eastern part of Libya. So now because the western route, as we saw, is super dangerous, people on the move divert their routes to either Tunisia or eastern Libya. And these two graphics show this a bit. I forgot about this one. These are the life jacket handouts of unidentifiable Maltese boats. And these two graphics explain a bit how the rise of boats happened. So you see far more boats in 2023. This graphics is made from our incredible nice docs team. Shout out to them. And then another graphics shows that the amount of people also, that's the dark blue chart, really got high. That's because little boats rose, but the boats are super packed, so 700, 800 people. So if you have 10 of them, it's already a lot. To explain you a bit how our lovely brigade that we will introduce very shortly came into being, I will just give you a very quick introduction to the political situation in eastern Libya. Upper left corner is Dabeiba. He's the normal friend of the EU and UN government. And then to the right, we have lovely Khalifa Haftar. And he used to be really a persona non grata. Nobody would meet him ever. He's convicted war criminal in the US. Used to work for a very long time for the CIA, weirdly enough, is US citizen, is cooperating with the Wagner Group a lot. And yeah, he's not like the really nice guy. This year, for the first time, we saw EU officials meeting with him. So Meloni met with him in May, if I remember rightfully. Maltese officials met with him, and Piantedosi, the interior minister of Italy, openly said he's looking forward or hoping for good cooperation to hinder migration with him. And so he has a son, Saddam Haftar, and his son has a militia. Yeah, these very nice guys there are super notorious in eastern Libya for the extrajudicial killings, for torture. Amnesty wrote a whole catalog of their horrors. And they're parts of them are Salafi groups of Matkali origin, but that's just a side note. So they are kind of also cooperating with the East. But the main thing is, as you see with their beautiful cars, they were mainly land-based until this year. And now we were the first to see them at sea. That's their vessel, which has the same name, Tariq bin Ziyad. And we also saw for the first time how they intercepted these big fishing vessels. And their maritime crew is mostly Southeast Asian, judging from the accent. And we also investigated a bit. Like, we Googled the ship and found that it was produced from Volume, a United Arab Emirates-based company. And judging from the technicalities, this ship isn't made to petrol. So it can't petrol. It's really made to go for one specific place very fast. It's super modern, and go back. So while the operating crew is a hired crew, the militias are on board. And it's based in Benghazi. And so, just next slide, sorry. To come to the political context, European officials were, as I said, meeting with Haftar, and they were openly talking about their hopes to cooperate. And just to give you, like, there's this disgusting recycling system. And TBZ, for example, was involved in the Pylos shipwreck. So they were the persons at the airport guiding the people to the boats. So there were people that got intercepted beforehand on a big fishing vessel, brought back to shore. Then they had to pay ransoms, 3,000 to 5,000 euros, refugees in prisons, they had to pay ransoms. Then they went on the second boat, and the second boat was then the Pylos shipwreck, in which 700 plus people died. And so TBZ is really like a classic militia group. They have a magic business model. They send people out, let them pay for that, then they intercept them, then they get ransom from them, then they send them out again, let them pay for that again. So we have no proof whether this is fully coordinated by the EU, but for sure there's some cooperation going on. And refugees in the hands of TBZ are heavily tortured. They are shot next to their heads. We have heard interviews with people that have been on the vessels on the vessel that we observed from the sky, and it's really horrific. And Felix will show us now how they cooperate with the EU on an operational level to find people in distress, and on the example of one specific case.
So yeah, thank you very much. What you see here are all the SAR 3 departures that we monitored in 2023, either with our airplanes or together with other NGOs, and especially also with the alarm phone. And it may look a little bit dry or boring in the beginning, but what you will see here are all the blue dots are basically the stress cases, and the red dots are TBZ interceptions. And what you see here, which is quite remarkable in the beginning, is that they're entering the Maltese search and rescue zone whenever they want. And so they simply don't care about the stuff that Matthias, for example, told you before. And they are also operating really far away from Benghazi, which led to the question, how is it possible that they're going to find these boats without aerial surveillance? Because, for example, our vessels, Sea-Watch 3, Sea-Watch 5, I mean, they're patrolling in a specific area, but in the end of the day, we need our own airplanes to find boats. So we had a lot of questions. And the first spotting was on the 7th of June this year. It's a fancy boat. It's kind of brand new. Because of the registration number, which is written on the deck from the boat, it was quite easy for us to also have a deeper look into history. The vessel was sailing next to India. As Paul said, it's coming from Volume, which is a UAE-based company. And it's an offshore supply vessel, which is capable to carry a lot of persons while they are not able to patrol because of the tiny fuel and freshwater tanks. But let's go straight into one remarkable case, which happened on the 27th of June. What you see here is an interception, again, inside in the Maltese search and rescue area. You see a wooden boat with up to 400 persons. And why is this so important for us? Simply because we just gathered a lot of information to seriously prove that Frontex was involved in the guidance and the coordination of this. So the stuff that we are going to use day by day are especially the SAR boundaries, like the search and rescue area boundaries. We are receiving alarm phone informations. We're going to check the merchant vessel tracks. We're going to use our own airborne operations. We call the rescue coordination centers in Tripoli, in Malta, and in Rome, and also our contacts that we gathered in Benghazi. And of course, we're going to use airplane tracks, either from Frontex or from other state actors. So because of that, we established a quite powerful tool, which is helping us to go really deep into specific dates and also to specific distress cases. Because in the end of the year, for example, we collected more than 2,000 boats in distress only from 2023. So now let's have a deeper look. 27th of June, what we did here is that we monitor the Frontex activities. So we're going to use public information, which is available on flight radar. We're going to use ADS-B exchange, which is the transmission signal that smaller aircrafts need to carry on. And we also have our own antennas, which are installed in Lampedusa. And whenever Frontex, for example, is doing a weird maneuver, like an anomalia or like an orbit, it gives us an indicator. Especially here. So Frontex lowered the altitude, they were circling for quite a while about something made of their interests, which is then the reason why we're going to start our airborne operation and check it out. Because here again, when we, for example, would call the rescue coordination centers, or if we would call Frontex and tell them, hey, listen, we have seen you on radar, there might be something interesting, they just simply don't talk to us. So when we received this information, here again, we started our airborne operation and flew to the last known position, but we could not find any distress case anymore. What we have witnessed was an interception by the Tariq Benjed militia, who had seriously no idea what they are doing. So we just asked the captain, because it was the first encounter ship where we basically have spotted them in an action, and this is how the captain responded to us. So what you clearly can see here is that the captain from the Tariq Benjed had no idea where he was. On the other hand, Paul also proved before that most likely the maritime crew is not coming from the militia itself, it's mainly hired. And we asked for more information about that, because we also really wondered how is it possible that you're going to find a boat in distress so far away from your home country or like your home port. And the captain handed over a number from Mr. Abdullah, which never really happens. So we called Mr. Abdullah, and Mr. Abdullah is working for the Libyan government in the eastern part as a translator. And we just asked him, like, how is it possible that you're going to find these boats? Where was the information coming? And he again have in mind that we still have these Frontex track, which gives us an indicator. And this is what Mr. Abdullah told us via phone call.
From Osprey 2? Okay.
Yes.
So Osprey 2, the aircraft from Frontex?
Yes, yes.
Called the Tariq Ben Said and told them about a boat in distress?
Yes.
So basically the militia itself proved that they received the coordinations and the information from Frontex. So let's bring all these informations together and have a deeper look into our reconstruction tool. You will see here the movement of merchant vessel tracks, which would act differently if, for example, Frontex would have sent out a media relay. You see the ADS-B track from Frontex itself, and you see the last known position, and the orange line is the Saar boundary from the Libyan search and rescue zone to the Maltese search and rescue zone. So here, really early in the morning, Frontex found the boat, diverted them back to south. A couple of hours later, we then also started our own airborne operation to check out, went to the last known position, which was still in Libyan search and rescue area, went up to the north, could not find the distress case, and then were able to see the interception. And with this information, we are going straight to press, because this is something that we need to make public. This is I'm highly interested about civil society in general. And in this particular case, we partnered up with Lighthouse Reports, Spiegel, and Al Jazeera, who also then brought all these puzzle pieces into one. So let's have a look. And especially the merchant vessel tracks gives you quite an indicator, because here again, if Frontex, for example, would have sent out a Mayday relay, which is an emergency signal on public communication, there would be an at least tiny different track from the merchant vessel. So it means A, Frontex have never sent out a Mayday relay, or B, the merchant vessel was straight released by the Rescue Coordination Center for Malta. Both could be possible. Another case, which is I think a little bit more clear, happened on the 2nd of August. In the morning, our friends from Open Arms, which is a Spanish-based rescue organization, has overheard radio communication from an unknown aircraft who basically guided the Tariq Ben Zayed to something out of interest. So Open Arms were sending out these information straight to us, and we then also started our airborne operation, flew to the last known position, and this is what we found. So what is really interesting here, I mean, first of all, you have the Maltese accent. Al Jazeera proved that the pilot was coming from Malta. Second of all, this is a typical behavior from armed forces of Malta, that they never identify themselves, so they're not handing out their call sign, they're invisible on these public informations. But on the other hand, there's Malta radar, which is also tracking state actors whenever they leave Malta or whenever they come back to Malta. And two aircrafts were active these days. Heading south in the early of the morning, and just a couple of hours later, after we have found the interception, they were also going north. And this time, we could create a lot of pressure together with the press. And what was interesting here is that Malta did not deny that they co-worked with this actor. First of all, they called them Benghazi Coast Guard, which is absolutely completely wrong. And second of all, they said something bullshitly that they're cooperating with every actor in the vicinity who is capable to rescue persons in distress. I mean, just to be clear, since the beginning of Sea-Watch, almost 30,000 people have drowned in the Central Mediterranean Sea. These are dark figures. So these are only numbers that got replicated either by NGOs or by United Nations operations. There are a lot of boats, a lot of people who are drowned without going in any contact with any authority. So it's way higher. And the only European answer that we receive for years and day by day is more border violence. It's a support now with militias. And when you have a deeper look into Tariq Ben Zayed, it's now also the cooperation with warlords. And because of that, and this is something that needs to be really clear on this, we are dealing right now with the most deadly year since 2017. So almost 3,000 persons have drowned this year while they tried to cross the Mediterranean Sea because of these implications. And another thing, and this is quite important to understand, is that we also use open source intelligence. So we get a lot of information from Twitter, we get a lot of information from Snapchat, Facebook groups, and especially also TikToks, because these people are also present themselves. And the video that you have seen was not edited by us. This is how they want to be seen also in the outside world. And it's quite outrageous, and it's also really worrying, but in the end, it gives us an idea what kind of partner the European Union is searched for, because what do you think these militias are doing when they have intercepted persons and dragging people against their will back to Libya?
صوتكم احلى جو احلى شباب واحلى رفقه واحلى من يرافقني في الدنيا والله يومكم طيب يا سيدي مرحبا
عيد حسابي خوتي اللي مدها رفاق اصحابي صوره جميله ومحتاي مصابي كي عقد يلهج عز في ميدانا يا مرحبا.
Yes, indeed, they're doing a fucking barbecue. So thank you very much. As again said, we are presenting a lot of NGOs today, not only Sea-Watch, this is a cooperative partner up, especially also with Lighthouse Reports and with Alarmphone. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I guess we have some questions here. Please take your mic. Thank you, Paul Wagner, Matthias Horn, and Felix Weiss. Who has a question? Oh, yes, Signal Angel. Please go.
Thank you. We are wondering in the online community whether China has a part in this region, and if so, how are they involved?
We have no idea. I mean, what we know for sure is that the eastern part of Libya is partnering up with Russia, and there were a lot of Wagner activities in the past. And I mean, Libya is a battlefield, so on the east, western part, you have Turkey, you have the European Union, you have Italy, who is trying to get more access to specific kind of involvements. And on the eastern part, you have Egypt and especially also Russia, but with China, we have no idea.
I was thinking whether China hasn't had, there was this catastrophe in Derna, and there were quite some international, but there was, I mean, even Germany, like everyone sent kind of help, but that's the last time I read anything about China in Libya, I think.
One interesting thing is that China sent armed drones to Haftar, that must have been in 2019 or something, when the civil war erupted again. And there was a very interesting drone war that was before the that started in the Ukraine, when the western part of the government was equipped by Turkish armed drones and the eastern part by Chinese armed drones. So I'm talking about the really huge ones, so not the quadrocopter kind of stuff.
Can we go to number one here, please?
Yeah, thanks for your talk. Do you know whether it's technically possible to locate satellite telephones to radars for the European Coast Guards?
Yes, that's possible. They already did. There was one major shipwreck, which all of that started, which was happening in 2013. So a big boat capsized in front of Lampedusa. And then a couple of weeks later, another big boat capsized in front of Malta, which was the reason why the European Union has established, at least for 1 year, a sea rescue operation, the Mare Nostrum. And later, journalists found out that they sneaked into Zaraya communication from persons on the move who were basically drowned then a couple of hours later. So it's technically possible to get access to Zaraya phones, yes.
Because from communications with them, they often deny that they are capable of doing this. Do you have maybe like sources, like technical information that can prove that they are capable of doing this? I mean, you already mentioned like public sources.
I mean, in terms of detection, Frontex said very clear that the Crotone shipwreck, they found out that the vessel was somewhere by detection of satellite phones. But it's not clear if the technology was on board of an aerial asset, so a plane, because it could also be satellite-based, because Frontex is also, since 2021, using satellite detection from space by Hawkeye 360, which is a company, I forgot where it's based, could be Israel. It's one of the companies that is operating these small cube satellites, and they are one of the first customers of that company, and I think the contract is also at least once, that was a one-year contract, prolonged. But this is about detection, so it's not about interception. And I also doubt that Frontex is interested in listening to the calls of migrants on boats, because that's not the task of Frontex. They don't do law enforcement. That would be, for example, Europol that might be interested to intercept the calls with what they call traffickers or something. But this is one of the proofs.
All right, can we go to number four, please?
Thanks. Yeah, thank you for your talk. That was all extremely depressing, and we're seeing fascism rising in Europe at the moment quite a lot. So what would your tips, or what's your idea, what can one do? What do you need? What can one do?
I mean, we need money, for sure. And that's always the easiest solution, because Sea-Watch and also the other organizations are running by fundings. And on the other hand, I mean, what we have seen right now also with GEAS is a massive, 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 massive shit show when it comes to migration policies, which is also kind of invisible for civil society. So I think right now it is really important to still create awareness about the situation in the Central Mediterranean Sea. No one really cares how much people are drowning day by day or year by year. And this topic quite often gets completely lost in media debates. So for us, it is really important to keep the attention high and also to nail it down what Frontex and also state actors are doing with this specific electronic and technology day by day. But as again, supporting sea rescue NGOs, supporting the alarm phone, creating awareness is already quite a powerful tool for us.
But also just organize, fight, protest, take the streets. Like, we are just an NGO.
Let me just add, Felix mentioned the CS package, so the so-called migration and asylum package that the EU Parliament and Council agreed upon in 2 weeks before. And the next step will be to criminalize all the helpers of migrants, and there is another package on the way that was already presented by the European Commission, which is targeting on what they call human smugglers, but it contains also certain paragraphs that could adapt to civil rescue organizations, and these kind of packages could even be worse after the council dealt with it, and when they end up in the parliament that they have to decide upon. And normally in the parliament is not a firewall for civil rights, it's the opposite. So we saw that clearly on the CS regulation.
So help where we can, please. Number two, you have a question.
Thank you for the talk. I was wondering if, is there any way to get in contact or educate or let people know that are on the move about how to get in contact with you? I mean, it seemed like you have the problem that sometimes Frontex knows about distress calls before you. Could you, or are you doing anything to try to be the, I don't know, address for people on the move? Or is that even feasible in any way?
Unfortunately, it's super dangerous for us because we are not a state and Sea Rescue is a state thing. So we need to cooperate with the rescue coordination centers whenever they also don't go in contact with us. So for example, when the alarm phone is receiving a distress call, they also have to inform the rescue coordination centers while also putting the NGOs in CC. So this is a super valid information, but we cannot go straight into contact with persons on the move. because that could criminalize us heavily.
Why would that criminalize you?
Because it's a state responsibility.
It's not your responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Fine. One more question, number one.
So, in the case of these militias, in the past, there were reports, for example, from the Sea Watch, vessel, that these so-called Libyan Coast Guard threatened to open fire upon rescuers, especially NGOs. And my question would be, how dangerous do you assess the situation with these militias roaming the seas when actual NGOs try to save these people? How dangerous is it for the NGOs to rescue people if there are militias roaming around?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we are partnering up with different kind of security companies who have more details about what kind of weapons are being installed on the Libyan Coast Guard vessels and so on. So, for example, Libyan Coast Guard is carrying Kalashnikovs and different kind of other automatic rifles, which are not capable to shut down an aircraft. That doesn't mean anything. We don't go super close to this actor anyway. But it means that we cannot stay there forever. And while the so-called Libyan Coast Guard still receives a lot of money from the European Union, it would be really, really stupid if they would, for example, kill an NGO member. With Tarek Ben Jaid, seriously, no idea. They are incredibly dangerous. They have no idea what they're doing. When you have a deeper look about what's going on in the eastern part of Libya, they are completely out of control. So also when we receive information that these actors is in the vicinity, we also send out an alarming message to all the other NGO vessels to don't go super close to this.
But it also happened already that, I mean, if I remember rightfully, that we have been threatened with surface-to-air missiles.
Yeah.
I mean, so I guess that's a real danger, because you can have your security firms that evaluate stuff for you, but then you're still facing individuals that sometimes saying, yeah, we are in Libya, go out of Libyan territory, while we are clearly in international waters. So that don't even know where they are. Like.
We take one more question for number four.
It's not a question. I have a lot of rage in me every time I listen to the kind of informations of what you all NGOs are doing. You are modern heroes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I would love to hear some more about this news. But next Congress, probably we'll get the new update. I hope it will be better. Thanks again for Paul Wagner, Matthias Honroy, and Felix Weiss.